Hey there and welcome back. I'm Lucy Barkas and this is the Leader X podcast, the future of work. In my book, Leader X, a call for X generation leaders to step up, take control and lead with impact, I share the five my's of leading organizations and teams. My legacy is all about getting clear about what you want to create, the impact you want to have on your people, customers, and the world around you. Ultimately, your purpose. It's the opportunity to dream a little bigger, craft a clear vision, and to strategize. But how do you do this when the world is so unpredictable and fast changing? In this series, I welcome futurists, people who hang out in the possibilities of the future of work, and I ask them about what's coming up, from branding to AI, automation and culture, products to talent development, nothing is off limits. The goal is to inspire you, challenge you, and help you think bigger about your impact, your legacy. Head to the website to sign up to the 3WH newsletter, where those who are serious about leadership now and in the future will get all the tools, tips and methods to be the leader they wish they'd had.
Today, I welcome Andrea Newton of Confident Conversations. She's a master at helping leaders have those really important yet often unsaid conversations. We will explore why we avoid them, how we can start having them, and why they really matter. She created the highly acclaimed Are You All Right, Mate? Aimed at encouraging peer support around mental health and Confident Conversations for those who need to develop a more assertive communication style. She is the host of her own podcast, Confident Conversation, sharing practical advice, tips, techniques from over 20 years of experience working with thousands of managers. So without further ado, let's meet Andrea. So hi, Andrea, how are you today?
I'm really good. We've actually got sunshine in the north. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I've got to say, I'm not prepared for this weather, last year I was getting used to all these heat waves, and now, you know, after cloudy summer, I'm just like, where's this come from? So I'm adjusting again, but I'm not going to complain. No. I refuse to complain.
No, loving it.
Yeah. So I've obviously done the introduction, but I'd really like you to tell the listeners a little bit about your story and how you've ended up being a conversational expert. But yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. To cut a very long story short, I originally worked in HR. That's my background. And part of my role was supporting line managers. And I kept finding that whenever there was a difficult conversation to be had, it would be something that would end up on my desk, or that at least I'd be asked to ride shotgun while they, you know, sort of did this. And so I took it upon myself to start to do some training with the managers within the organization so that they could take care of their people responsibilities without having to, you know, necessarily have their hand held. But that's a long time ago, because I've actually been freelance for 21 years now, Lucy. I know, it's incredible. I'm only 27 in my head. And really, over the last 21 years, I've worked with literally thousands of managers, helping them to have conversations that matter. I find that as human beings, we don't really relish the thought of what might be a challenging conversation. And obviously, managers within the workplace, they need to be able to have those, whether it's to do with performance, attendance, whether they've got an issue with a supplier or a contractor. We need to be able to have conversations that matter whilst also maintaining a professional working relationship. And so that's what I do. And over the years, my offer has expanded. And I now help organizations to look at 7 significant conversations. Whether you're a team leader starting out and needing to get confident in simply giving direction, all the way through to, I'm actually qualified as a tutor with the National Center for Suicide Prevention Training. So I also help organizations to have conversations at that end of the spectrum, perhaps when things are a little bit more sensitive. So yeah, in a nutshell, started in HR, decided that they needed some help, and I've never looked back.
Well, it's amazing because I don't have an HR background, but I obviously work in the field of, you know, personal development or leadership development. And conversations have always been pretty easy for me. And I was never afraid to have those tough ones. But I always did it with kindness and empathy. So it never really felt all that challenging. And I guess it was just a natural thing that, that I had. And it was only when I started then working with organizations and teams that I realized they weren't having even the most basic of conversations. And the course that I tend to run is, I call it Courageous Conversations, because I want that heart and that courage in there. But people say to me, why didn't I know this stuff? How did I not know how to have a basic conversation with somebody? And it's because generally we're not taught, you know, at any level, you know, through school or anything like that. It's only generally when you go on a workshop that I guess you do, or maybe you've been through some kind of counseling or some mediation, that you start picking up some of these skills. So I say to them, you know, don't worry, if you've never learned these skills, you're not expected to have them. But there is also this real underlying issue that people just don't want to have them. So I'd like to kind of pick your brains a little bit about, why do you think, not about the skills, but in terms of the issues about not having these important conversations?
I think what I've learned over the years is that we could summarize it under one heading, and that is fear of the outcome. I might say something that means this person then doesn't like me and I need to be liked. It's a basic human need. Or I might say something that causes upset or distress, or I end up with a grievance, or even worst case scenario, I'm looking at an employment tribunal because I handled it really clumsily. It might also be dependent on the culture of the organization that actually that isn't what we do here. I find a lot of organizations where people will say, well, you know what, I'm reluctant to go out on a limb because nobody's got my back. Because as much as organizations say to us, we want to have a climate of open, honest, frank dialogue.
They don't really, do they?
Yeah, they only want that to a certain extent. And so there's lots of reasons, you know, and as human beings, we don't like conflict. We don't like feeling awkward. And obviously some of the conversations that I now train around things like conversations around mental health, conversations about suicide ideation, they are not subjects that we talk about anyway. So, you know, why would I go there unless I absolutely had to? And it was interesting, I saw some research recently that suggested as many as 78% of managers would rather avoid difficult conversations at all costs. And 66% of those said it was because it made them feel anxious. And I do also think, you know, what you said is absolutely right. We don't teach people to have these conversations. And, you know, I know organizations that don't even teach people how to be managers. They promote them because they were good at their job. And we almost have an expectation that as soon as you've got the title, that you can manage performance, you can tackle poor attendance, you can support somebody who's got concerns about their mental health. And it isn't something that comes naturally to everybody.
No, I totally agree with you. And I'd say that there's also one element that I've found is a real block and barrier, and it is, again, a fear thing, but it's about, well, what if I don't know the answer, or what if I don't have the right advice? And I say to them, you're not supposed to. No. You know, having a conversation doesn't mean you're in teacher mode or you're in advisor mode. Sometimes it's just saying, how are you? Or I've noticed a drop in performance, or I've noticed you're not yourself, or I noticed you behaved in a certain way in a meeting. How are you? And then that is often enough to start a conversation. And so feeling like you always have to have the answers, or feeling like you have to be the rescuer of people, often gets in the way, especially over conversations around mental health or some of the more vulnerable kind of subjects. Yeah,
absolutely. And if you try to be the rescuer in that situation, you'll probably do more harm than good. You know, fundamentally, we know that as human beings, we are experts in us. We probably know what we really need to do and the help that we might need. And having somebody diagnose or prescribe or give us the benefit of their experience actually sometimes can be quite dangerous, particularly if, as you say, it is some, you know, concern around mental health or even suicide ideation. So I always encourage people to take a coaching approach. What do you think the issue is? How do you feel you could best overcome that? What have you tried already? Have you spoken to anybody else about this? Because you don't have to be the expert. And again, I think that's something that when we become managers, we think we have to have all the answers. And therefore, we stay away from conversations where we might not, because people might rumble us and realise that we don't have all the answers.
And they're just doing the wrong kind of conversation. And that's it. Bottom line, when I explain to people, no, you know, it's formatting it or framing it in a different style of conversation. So you said that there's seven kinds of conversations that people tend to avoid. And obviously, this is the leadership podcast. So I'm presuming that this applies to leaders as well. So can you just run me through, what are those seven that you see?
So one, you've mentioned the courageous conversation, having the courage to say what needs to be said. Now, obviously, we're both here today talking about that in the workplace, but those are also skills that translate to everyday life. You know, people who feel they're being bullied, for example, they need to have the courage to say that's not acceptable. So there's the courageous conversation. There's what I call the crucial conversation, where I perhaps do have a concern about you. There's the confident conversation, because I am now assertive. I might have to represent my team at a meeting with more senior people, or I might have to go out and meet customers or suppliers. I need to be confident to say what needs to be said. And that's kind of the way it goes all the way through to the crisis and the critical conversations, which unfortunately, the times that we're living through, that conversation is becoming more and more important for leaders, especially if they are genuinely concerned for the well-being of their teams. So to my mind, an effective leader will be able to conduct all seven of those conversations and be able to support people, not be the expert.
Yeah, and I bet there's very few leaders that actually feel equipped to be able to have those conversations, which is why the work that you do is so important. And yes, with your own podcast, about being able to just share some of those stories must be, you know, really powerful for people, you know, just whether they're now doing their daily commute again or going for a run, just going for a walk, just being able to actually process and realise that they can do this. It is safe to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're recording this in the week where we've got World Suicide Prevention Day. And I am really encouraging people to see that they don't need to be a mental health expert to make a difference to somebody in this situation. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to bust a few myths, and we need to recognize that not everybody who's having thoughts of suicide will be stood upon the bridge staring down into the water below. You know, that could be the person that's opposite you in a disciplinary hearing. That could be the person that you're now having to talk to about potential redundancy. And it's about being equipped as a decent human being to do the right thing by that person, whatever the circumstances are. And so being able to have conversations of that nature, to me, is absolutely crucial, absolutely critical for any decent leader.
And you know what? One of the things that I often see and experience is, because of the fear that people have around having these conversations, they either don't have them or they put their armor up and they, you know, almost go at it like a machine, without zero empathy, zero humanity. And then they actually create everything that they're afraid of, you know, the disconnection, the bad relationships, the grievances against them. And so again, that's why I like the word courageous, because it's been able to say, actually, I'm just going to meet you human to human here. Mm-hmm. The information or the questions that I'm going to ask, you know, I don't know the answers for. We're going to get into messy territory here.
Yeah.
Neither of us are in control. We're just going to see how it goes. And to do that, you do have to be human. And I love it that you brought that up.
And the important bit there, as you say, it's not that I've got the answers. It's that I'm willing to help you find them. you know, that is the real key here, especially if we are talking about somebody whose mental health isn't great and they're starting to feel ineffective, they're starting to feel like a burden, they're starting to feel as though they're not productive. I don't want you to have the answers. I want you to help me feel as though I'm capable of finding answers for myself. And that's why I always advocate that coaching approach. You know, so what do you think would be helpful here? What have you tried already? What ideas have you got? And really using a combination of compassion and curiosity. Those are the two things for me that really make that connection. Compassion, that I care about you as a fellow human being. I'm not your mother, I'm not your social worker, and I'm certainly not your therapist, but as a fellow human being, I care about you. And I'm curious to understand your situation so that I don't assume, I don't prejudge, I don't suggest, so that I really hear you for who you are.
Oh, wow, that's so important. And I think everybody really needs to have some kind of development in how to do some basic coaching skills. And to be fair, there's no excuse not to now. The coaching industry has been around 30, 40 years, probably even longer now. And I had my first coach training as a way to deal with poor performance. So I think it was called Coaching for Performance back, you know, when I was about 21, 22. And I'm so thankful for that, which is probably why I've always found conversations quite easy, because right at the start of my management career, I was taught the basic skills, but I still avoided some conversations. Mm-hmm. And the result was usually those little molehills ended up creating huge mountains because I left it too long.
Absolutely.
And I remember the very first time I ended up having one of these really powerful conversations, probably about 3 or 4 weeks overdue. And I'd already managed to disengage my whole team. I'd really upset a very key influencer within the team. And she was very upset with me. And I just made a very flippant comment because I was annoyed about something. But that stuck with her. The next day I'd forgotten all about it, but for her, it stuck. Mm. And she didn't have the courage to come and talk to me about it. And all I noticed was her bad behaviors. So eventually we sat down and I said, look, there's something going on here. A few weeks ago, we were brilliant. We had a great relationship. And now when I walk in the room, I can feel something's up. Mm. What's going on? And then I just listened, and I listened to her explain. It was this one comment that I made, and I didn't try and defend myself. I didn't try and excuse myself. I just said, I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. And then we started, how can we move this forward? How can we repair it? Yeah. And I think that was, for me, the moment when I realized, this can be done. Yes, it could have been horrendous, mm-hmm. but actually this can be done. And you know, 20 odd years later, we're still friends. She's one of my best supporters.
But the thing there, Lucy, you were prepared to own it. You were prepared to say, I'm sorry, which takes us back to the point you make, where often we're so armoured up that we actually can't be vulnerable and say, yeah, I messed up there. I'm sorry. And, you know, thinking about that whole business of being armored up, sometimes we do need to acknowledge if we have played a part in whatever the issue might be. And like you, I go into a lot of organizations and I find that what might once have been a molehill is now a massive mountain range. And we have developed workarounds and we've moved people to other departments and we've done all sorts of ridiculous things to actually avoid it rather than deal with it.
And the thing is, everybody knows. It's like it's the elephant in the room. So, yeah, as you're moving people around or creating new roles or bringing in this process, everybody knows what the
real
issue is.
We know what you're doing. Yeah.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and catch up on previous episodes, such as Daniel Priestley, who talks about high-performing teams and how to build them, branding expert Sapna Piru, and award-winning author Jonathan Humus, who really talks about leading through a crisis.
I was- was once on a Monday morning with a site manager in a construction company that I was working with, and he'd just got a list of the tradesmen that he was expecting on his site that week. And I could see him going through the list and mentally go, oh God, I've got him. Right, okay, that won't get done this week then. And, oh, I've got him. So, oh, I better get some more help with that because that isn't his thing. And I said to him, Pete, what are you doing? And he said, well, we do this every week. He said, because you never know who you're going to get. And I said, but you've just gone through all those people and you've had to think of a workaround because of who you've got. Why doesn't anyone just talk to them about their performance so that when they rock up on site, they can do what you need? Oh, well, he said, no, you see, he's a really nice lad and nobody wants to upset him. And he's related to the MD and, you know, he's good at what he does. He just doesn't do a lot of it. And it was just like the organization must have been losing so much performance, production, money. By working around instead of actually sitting down eyeball to eyeball, kneecap to kneecap and tackling whatever the actual real issue was.
And you know what? People are generally far more reasonable than we give them credit for. And, you know, again, if you have the conversation in the right way, people are generally, you know, oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that was an issue. Yeah. Sometimes they can get quite annoyed that, well, why didn't you tell me this months ago? And I love the phrase that Brené Brown uses where she says, clear is kind, unclear is unkind. Yeah. And I think that's really valuable to say that actually, if you're not having these conversations, you're being really unkind to the other person, allowing them to fail.
Yeah.
So just tell me, in terms of the, we've talked about coaching skills, we've talked about taking off the armor. What other skills do you kind of teach, or what are your common go-to tricks of the trade really that you would love leaders to hear?
I think one of the things that you've actually already referenced, and that's being prepared to shut up and listen. Again, it comes back to partly thinking that we have to have all the answers. And, you know, as I'm sure you've heard Mr. Covey say, seek first to understand, only then to be understood. And one of the things that I tend to work a lot with is helping managers realize there's a big difference between listening to understand and listening to reply. Mm. And most of us in the workplace, time's tight, we're under pressure, we've got things to do, we listen in order to reply. And we don't actually process and really hear what people are saying. And if you are going to have a conversation that counts, it has to have that listening to it, which means that sometimes you do have to suspend your own agenda, your own judgment, your own thoughts, values, beliefs, and really hear what the other person is saying. And again, listening is never something that we're taught to do. We're taught to speak and write and, you know, communicate in all sorts of ways. But I don't know about you, I never did a class on listening.
No, not at all. It was only when really I had training, or and in particular when I did my own coach training, that I realized that there were all these different levels of listening. And even, you know, just being able to hold a conversation and zoning in and out as we internally process that information, it was mind-blowing to me. And again, when I share this with people, they're like, why didn't I know this? I'm like, none of us did. So don't beat yourself up, but now you have the knowledge. Now do something different about it. And it does take practice.
For sure. And that's the bit, you know, sort of at the sharp end of the conversations that I help people with. So if we are talking about somebody who is in distress, sometimes all they need is someone to listen. I don't even need you to ask questions. I just need you. Again, it's that compassion. I need you to make me feel as though I matter. And sometimes making me feel as though I matter is nothing more than giving me your time and attention. And I do think we worry far too much about conversations of that nature when actually sometimes it is just about shut up and listen.
Yeah. I know. Which is perfect for a podcast because they're hopefully shutting up and listening. And it's really going into their minds. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I had my own experience of rooting around at rock bottom. You know, the wheels really did fall off and my intention was to end my life. And, you know, I'm quite open about that story. And the thing that got me through wasn't some smart expert with all the answers. It was simply people who were prepared to hear what I had to say, to make me feel as though I mattered. People who didn't judge me, people who didn't tell me that, you know, what I really should do or how I ought to feel, but people who were just there and said, talk to me about what's going on for you. Help me understand. And I know that if you are ever caught up in that place with only your own thoughts for company, you know, just being able to offload, just being able to share with somebody else. You know, they say a problem shared is a problem halved, isn't it? That's what they say. I've not got that the wrong way around. And so one of the critical elements around conversations that matter is listening.
And you know what, during my lowest times, I think for me, I wasn't at rock bottom, but I was going through a divorce and I was, my children were all upset and I was trying to hold down my job and work out childcare. It was all just, everything was in chaos. And I'd been brought up to just get on with it, pull your socks up and carry on. And I think that the most powerful question that somebody said to me, well, they said, Lucy, I notice you're not yourself. Mm. How can I help?
Yeah. Sure.
And actually, I didn't want them to do anything, but I just said, asking that question, stopping me in my tracks is all I actually needed. Yeah. And then I was able to start talking. So I get it. It doesn't need to be, you know, a really big, deep or whatever conversation. Sometimes it can just open with, how are you? Or I notice.
Yeah.
What's going on with you? I'm here.
For sure, because so many of us are brought up to put a brave face on it, you know, and that was actually the cause of my situation, was because I'd put a face on it for too long and it got to the point that I just couldn't hold it any longer. But admitting to somebody that that's how you're feeling, given the world in which we live, was a real challenge. But like you said, just having somebody notice, I'm just a bit concerned about you. Are you sure that everything's okay? Oh, my days. The value of feeling as though you matter enough that someone's noticed and is prepared to give you time and attention. You know, just to burst that toxic bubble and to help you open your mind to other possibilities. So we should never underestimate the power of good listening. Give it a good listen to.
And you know what? Once you start doing it, you can't stop. It's almost like there's this skill. And as soon as you start getting these really positive responses and you realize it's not so scary as you thought it was, you just cannot stop having these open heart-to-heart kind of conversations. Everything is led with empathy and kindness. And I've got to say, if I had a leader, a boss, you know, any colleague who treated me in that way, I'd be so loyal to them. I'd just want to repay them for all of the help and kindness. So it's not just about fixing performance issues. It leads into every element of your organization, the culture, the business. And so, yeah, we just need to get going with this.
It's basic human psychology. You know, I will only value the business if I believe the business values me. And how do I know that you value me? Because you've got time for me, you show concern for me, you're interested in me as a human being. And I work in a lot of industries such as construction, engineering, et cetera, where, you know, the mental health risks, et cetera, are a lot higher. And they shy away from that listening thing because that's pink and fluffy. And, you know, that's not what we do in this industry. And actually, it isn't. The art of listening is about being a respectful, decent human being. It isn't pink and fluffy. And we don't need to, you know, lie down on the couch and tell me all about it. It's not about that. You could have a really useful conversation simply by going for a walk around the block with somebody. We don't have to be sat making eye contact and sharing a box of tissues. You know, it could literally be a walk around the block.
And you know what? I also, I find actually standing shoulder to shoulder with somebody is even more powerful than the face to face, because it says, you know, I'm on the journey with you. I'm going to walk the path with you.
Yeah.
So I love that you brought that analogy in.
So, you know, really, I think it was it the Dalai Lama who said something like, when you talk, all you do is share your knowledge. But when you listen, that's when you learn more knowledge. And we don't do enough of it. And I know it sounds naff, you know, good listening skills. And everybody says it to you as though, oh, that old chestnut. But the power of it, especially in conversations where somebody is struggling to be honest and admit what's really going on for them, that non-judgmental, non-critical listening to me is absolutely key.
And do you know what? It then spans out, you know, from your work environments to, you know, the way that you parent your children, the way you are with your partner at home. It's just like this ripple effect that does changes your whole world when you're able to master these skills. Mm-hmm. So if you were to think, you know, let's say everybody in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, they really understand from the back of this whole COVID thing that actually we need to be more human. We need to be a bit kinder. Mm. We need to listen to our people. And you fast forward 5 years, 10 years, maybe, what's the difference that you think we'll have in organizations if people just had these kind of conversations?
For me, it's the shift from people thinking that health and safety is hard hats, high vis and safety boots, and actually recognizing a truly healthy and safe environment is one where the culture is supportive of the people within it. And I talk a lot about psychological safety, and leaders are the single biggest influence in creating a psychologically safe workplace. Because when people feel safe, when people feel as though they matter, they can bring their whole selves to work. And when I can do that, I can play to my strengths. I can be authentic. I can be genuine. And I can invest my energy in doing a fantastic job for you, because I'm not having to use any of my energy to stay safe. And therefore, employee engagement, commitment, motivation, morale, if I feel valued in that way, organizationally, not only are you going to get a better day's work out of me, but you're also likely to get more loyalty. I'm probably going to be an advocate for the business rather than, oh, I work there and it's all right. You know, so there's so many benefits to us creating a climate where that's how people feel about the jobs they do.
Oh, do you know what? I hope your vision becomes a reality, because let's face it, after the last 18 months of being really hard, really disconnected, wouldn't it be amazing to have organizations that are that healthy, where you just love being with the people you work with?
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of organizations that have learned a lot of lessons these last 18 months, and actually organizations who are still learning, because I'm hearing now about people who are actually resigning rather than going back to perhaps the, shall we say, toxic culture that they used to work in.
And do you know what? It probably didn't feel toxic before.
No.
But now people have stepped away and reevaluated. They just thought, I don't want that anymore.
Yeah,
and yeah, the phrase, the great resignation, honestly, I don't know a single company that isn't experiencing this at the moment. So it's real.
Yeah.
So we're at the end of our time, and I really should have put an hour and a half in, because we're having great conversations. So the irony of it. But why don't you just tell me, where can people connect with you? What are you up to at the moment? Any new exciting stuff going on?
Okay. Well, this week, particularly at the beginning of September, as I said, it's World Suicide Prevention Day, which leads us through to Mental Health Awareness Day on the 11th of October. So really, the next 4 weeks for me, I'm doing quite a lot of work in that area, really helping managers to, you know, to develop their skills, especially now as we are inviting people back to the workplace more and more. We need to recognize that in the last 12 months, there's been an additional 300,000 referrals to mental health services. Now, statistically, some of those people are part of your team. So are you able to support that? Is the return to your workplace safe and successful? And that for me is a big piece at the moment because of what's happening in industry in general. And so I've put together a number of online resources that people can grab free of charge. The website's confidentconversations.co.uk. And if you go on to /stuff, because we like things to be simple, go to the stuff page and you'll find loads of free stuff to help you have conversations that matter. There's also information about there if you do need to signpost any of your people for professional help. The really useful resources is there. And obviously, my podcast, Really Useful Conversations, is a weekly dose of step up, say what needs to be said.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I do encourage everybody to go there. And yeah, you've been an absolute delight. And I'm so glad that we've connected. And yeah, long may our conversations continue. Thank you, Andrea.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
So, which conversations are you avoiding? Check out Andrea's website or head to www.3wh.uk.com. That's the number 3 and the letters W and H, and access some of our online courses. And now I call on you to step up, take control, and lead with impact. Follow and subscribe so you don't miss out on another great guest.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Leader X podcast. The Leader X podcast is a Gifted Gab production for 3WH.